I'm Lisa Morgan, Saturday afternoon host and co-host of The Weekly Reader here on WYPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make live streams like this one difficult to maintain. Stand up for public media and help fortify WYPR's future. Find out more and donate at WYPR.org. And thanks.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, Governor Wes Moore joins me to talk about the state's credit rating and what impact that he expects from President Trump's designating nearly 20 cities and towns in Maryland as sanctuary jurisdictions. Plus, I'll speak with Baltimore City Comptroller Bill Henry about why he broke with precedent and abstained from voting to send the mayor's preliminary budget to the city council for their consideration. Plus, the social justice advocate Ray Kelly talks about holding police accountable. So that's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. And now, ever since the Baltimore Opera Company went out of business back in 2009, local opera impresarios have worked hard to continue presenting productions that scratch the itch for local opera lovers. But it's been a challenge. Several small companies have come and gone in the years since Baltimore Opera's demise. Two companies, Maryland Opera and Opera Baltimore, are currently carrying the torch, and they've picked up a significant partner in the effort to make opera once again a part of the local landscape. That partner is the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. This weekend, the BSO will present Aida, one of Giuseppe Verdi's great masterworks. Here's a sample. This is the Triumphal March. Music of Giuseppe Verdi from his iconic opera Aida. Jonathan Hayward is the music director of the BSO. He'll be conducting these performances at the Meyerhoff on Friday night and at the Music Center at Strathmore on Sunday afternoon, and he joins me here in Studio B. Good to see you.
Always lovely to see you, Tom.
And Julia Cook is here as well. She's the president and general Opera Baltimore, one of the opera companies in Baltimore, collaborating with the BSO on their opera series over the next several seasons. Julia, welcome back. Good to see you.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
So, Jonathan, you have a plan to do Aida at the end of this season, and then in the next few seasons, you're going to finish the year with another opera as well. So talk about that sort of long-range plan.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, thinking about a sort of macro plan for this opera initiative was really important, and figuring out which composer sort of resonated with this enthusiastic idea of bringing opera to Baltimore, for me, was it became very apparent that Verdi had to be the composer. He was really, for me, the operatic composer for the people, and he wrote on topics that everyone can relate about. And I think that's my excitement behind opera. There's this incredible sense of relatability to his music, to his narrative. And I think that's why, for me, it was so important to pick Verdi.
So you're going to do a Verdi opera, not just any old opera, a Verdi opera.
Absolutely.
For the next, what, 4 years, something
yes,
like that?
Yes, that's the idea.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
You know, starting with Aida. So Julia, you know, one of the jobs you have in your business is to attract people who maybe aren't used to going to the opera to change that, you know, to develop the habit. When you have a piece like Aida, the story takes place in ancient Egypt. There's a young woman, Aida, who is held captive. She's an Ethiopian princess. The Egyptians have held her captive. And wouldn't you know it, an Egyptian general falls for her. But she's got a rival, another woman, Amneris. So that you've got the two women fighting it out over the general. You've got that thing going on. But it's an old story. It's, you know, Ethiopian princesses and stuff. It's just not the kind of stuff you see on TikTok.
Yet.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So how do you what does opera do to that story that makes it resonate?
That's a great question. I think what opera does to any story, it's the same answer. What I like to say to new opera audiences is you only need to know two things to understand opera. One is human nature does not change over generations, and relationships are hard. And if you just take those two things and you accept that they are true, you can see the stories that it doesn't matter where we are in time, humans behave a certain way. So whether it's princesses, rivalry, or people fighting for land, or overcoming the royal class, it's always the same thing. We are human. So I don't necessarily think that it matters. I don't mean to say that the story doesn't matter, but the way that operatic voices tell the story, that's what's really special about opera. Sometimes opera fans have said, I've said to them, what makes you alive about opera? What's exciting? They say, the stories. And I say, well, it's more than just that. It's the way that story is told. When it's told through opera, there's nothing that can do the same thing that the resonance of an acoustic experience, exchanging energy in a room together, that's different every single time.
Yeah, and it's an acoustic experience, as Julia says, Jonathan. So you all will be on the stage of the Meyerhoff, but no mics.
Yes.
They'll have a lot of stuff, but they have a full symphony orchestra backing them up, but no microphones. Part of the thing about grand opera is the grandness of the visual dimension of seeing an opera. You know, if you sit at the Metropolitan or in any of the great opera houses around the world, you see this stage full of people. I mean, sometimes there are hundreds of people in the chorus and, you know, ballet dancers and the works. You can't have all that on the stage of the Meyerhoff because there's that orchestra, that pesky orchestra that takes up all the room. So this is going to be kind of a concert version, kind of a semi-stage thing. Describe what folks have in store.
I mean, I think what's great about this sort of semi-stage approach is that you can create your own sort of visual for what you're receiving, essentially. And to be able to pare it down, if you will, and just focus on, you know, the quality of the singing, the intimacy of the singing as well, which I think sometimes, you know, particularly with Aida, there are some extraordinarily intimate music within this that you don't need a huge concert hall. You don't need a huge opera house to appreciate these moments that are so personal, so deep, so sincere. And I think actually those elements really come out a little bit more when you have this sort of semi-staged approach. And, you know, you're going to get the feeling of the grandness when everyone's on stage and the choir is on stage and the orchestra's on stage, you know, giving it their all for something like the grand finale. But the intimacy, particularly when it comes down to this work, is so beautiful when you can have it pared down, focused, and really maybe have it a bit more a feeling of a sort of more directness to that sort of music.
So when someone hears semi-staged, what does that mean exactly? People are going to be moving around a little bit. They'll walk a little to the left, a little to the
essentially,
right.
Essentially, just so you understand the relationships between the characters. You know, it's one thing to do a concert where sometimes you may not understand then how the characters are interacting. If they have a music stand in front of them and they're kind of every now and then looking at the person, but really looking at the score and stuff like that. But this way, they can tell the relationship. There's a physicality that they can really sort of understand, which I think will be brilliant with our phenomenal cast that we have.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that phenomenal cast. And you talk about the intimacy of some of this music. This is a famous aria sung by the famous soprano who's going to be singing it with you this weekend. This is an aria called O Patria Mia, My Father. And this is Angel Blue singing this beautiful aria from Verdi's Aida. Beautiful singing by Angel Blue, a terrific internationally acclaimed soprano. So, Jonathan, you and Angel know each other pretty well. You've worked worked together before.
So I had the great privilege of doing the piece with her for the first time, and she also was doing the piece for the first time. And so we had this very special moment of discovering the work together. And since then, she's taken it to Covent Garden in London, and also, of course, most recently at the Met. And so it feels like a real full circle moment to have her back on stage and collaborating with her again.
And Julia, how would you describe Angel's interpretation of the role of Aida, her approach to it, as compared to some of the other great singers? I mean, this was a role that Leontine Price made famous, and Maria Callas, and all sorts of people made famous. And each of them sings that aria, which is a very famous, you know, aria that a million people have sung, slightly differently. I mean, how would you describe Angel's take on it as opposed to some of these other great folks who preceded her?
Well, I think each soprano, each singer always has their own way of looking at something and their own way of interpreting it. And it's, I think, very much related to the physicality of one's voice. So just listening to that little clip that we heard, she has a very different sound from Leontine Price, a very different sound from a lot of the sopranos that have done this role. There's a lovely kind of steeliness to it that I think is really beautiful and compelling. But I also think that there's, the preparation that you talk to many coaches, you talk to your music director, you do your own study. So hopefully it's actually different every single time when she comes to the stage. And just listening to that little clip that we just heard, the phrasing is just slightly different than other ways I've heard it. And I love that. That's why I love going to a live performance. And also knowing that probably at each performance, Angel's going to be a little bit different. Mm.
Sure.
I love that.
Sure. And I misspoke. I said, O patria mia means, oh, my father. It's, oh, my country. She's a slave. Mm-hmm. She's an Ethiopian princess, and the Egyptians are enslaving her. And here's an African-American woman standing on the stage of the Meyerhof singing about slavery and missing her home. I mean, there is some immediacy and relevance to this, without a doubt.
Yeah, most certainly. Yeah, definitely is. And it's powerful, and it's again how this art form can relate to current day is so special.
410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday. Our phone number or our email address, midday@wipr.org. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more with Jonathan Hayward of the BSO and Julia Cook, the president and general director of Opera Baltimore. And you are welcome to join us if you have a question or comment. Again, 410-662-8780 or midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
Thank you.
another famous aria from Verdi's Aida, this performance of Celeste Aida sung by the great tenor Luciano Pavarotti. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome back to Midday. If you've just joined us, we're talking about Aida, which will be performed by the Baltimore Symphony in a semi-stage production at the Meyerhoff in Baltimore Friday night and at the Music Center at Strathmore in Bethesda on Sunday afternoon. Jonathan Hayward is the music director of the BSO. He'll be on the podium for those performances. He joins me here in Studio B. And joining us as well is Julia Cook, the president and general director of Opera Baltimore, which is working with the BSO to help facilitate their presentations of operas over the next few years. You can join us. Our number 410-662-8780. You can also send us an email if you prefer that, midday@wypr.org. So, Julia, we have an email from Mary who says, my 15-year-old niece has been taking a class on operas and she loves it. She's excited to see Aida Sunday at Strathmore. And her question for Angel Blue is, at what point in your career were you confident that opera was what you wanted and able to do? And my question is, what are your suggestions for a 15-year-old for training for a career in opera? And Angel couldn't make it today because she's got rehearsals, but you're a soprano, a reformed soprano, or recovering soprano. what are your suggestions for a 15-year-old who says, that's what I want to do?
Well, sing, just sing and enjoy yourself. Listen, experience. The voice takes some years to mature, and at 15, you're not quite sure what it's going to end up being. She's still growing. And what I always tell parents when they, because I was a voice teacher for many, many years, I tell them just to get them involved in any experience where they're getting to sing a lot and just enjoy and learn piano or learn an instrument, learn the musical side of things. Voice has the unique situation where everybody can sing. I truly believe everybody can sing. But if you are an instrumentalist, you probably started having your musical training when you were a little bit younger. And sometimes you find out that you love singing and that you can sing at a later age when you may not have had that formative musical training. And that is imperative. If you have any interest in being in the business, you've got to learn the technical side of things. So I would just say take in as much as she possibly can. Listen to different recordings. Honing your ears is a really important skill. Learn what you like, what you don't like. It's also opinion-based. So just enjoy. Because if she does end up going into this career, I think Jonathan and I would both say, I mean, it's really difficult. So you have to find that love. You have to find that early on. And you have to find out how to keep that consistent as you maintain. Because it's a lot. It's a slog sometimes.
When I was a young conductor in Boston, a bunch of us, you know, who were at the beginnings of our careers had a dear friend named Lorraine Hunt, who was a violist and a terrific violist. She played in my orchestra. She played in orchestras everybody else, and never told anybody that she was also studying voice. Just never mentioned it to any of us. I mean, we all hung out with each other all the time. She kept her mouth absolutely airtight shut for that for years, like 2 or 3 years. And all of a sudden, the Boston Symphony hired her to be a soloist. And we all said, wait a minute, Lorraine's singing with the BSO? She's not like filling in the viola section? And she went on to become one of the most famous mezzo-sopranos in the country.
Yes.
And she kept it a very, very big secret. Let's go to the phones. Deborah is on the line in Columbia. Welcome to the show with Jonathan Hayward and Julia Cook. Thanks for calling.
Good afternoon. Really interesting show. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. You are on the air.
Okay, great. I'm listening to the soprano singing the part of Aida. I'm just curious, when Verdi composed his opera, would he have cast a person of color in that role? Or would it have been a male or female or a younger male?
I'll do my best to answer that question. I don't know that at the time that this was composed in Italy, that there would have been much choice of who they would cast. And I think they would have cast an Italian singer probably of the day. And I don't even remember. Oh, a woman, yes.
That's a woman of color, probably.
Probably not in Italy.
Heck no.
Yeah.
Probably not. But to the question whether this would be a man or a woman, that's a great question because that brings up the idea of the pants role, which is a real thing in opera where male characters were sung by female singers. And that was sort of an older practice. And there were, you know, even in Mozart, you would find, and Octavian and Rosenkavalier, you find them throughout the repertoire. But Aida is always sung by a woman, unless you're doing some sort of specialized production, which could be fun, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you meet with the cast for the first time, so, I mean, here we are on Monday. I mean, you probably haven't started yet.
Oh, no, we started already.
Oh, you did? Okay.
After my matinee concert yesterday, we went straight into a
principal,
right into it. Mm-hmm. And it was extraordinary.
What's that first meeting like? I mean, I was the chorus master for the Baltimore Opera Company for 10 years. Yeah. And it was interesting how each director, each conductor had a different take of, you know, how we should begin the process. You've got this huge cast, you know, a dozen or so people singing. You're going to have a big chorus and all. What did you want to accomplish yesterday afternoon?
Yesterday evening after the lovely matinee, we just went through the opera, because the biggest thing for me at the beginning is how do we communicate? What do they need from me? What can I ask them to do? And a lot of it is just, you know, really getting to know each other. And it was extraordinary. I mean, of course, I was absolutely exhausted after my matinee concert, but I had one of the most artistically fulfilling days to be able to go from that matinee to conduct through this extraordinary opera with this incredible talent. I can't believe that we have such an incredible cast. You simply just won't want to miss it, because it's a very, very powerful cast that they've got some stories to tell within their music making. And that was day one. So, you know, it's only going to go up from here.
We have an email from Steve. Are there any good tickets left for Saturday's performance? So we don't know about the availability of tickets, but I can tell you there isn't a Saturday performance, Steve. So you got Friday night and Sunday. Those are your two choices.
We got a day off. Give us our day off in the rain. We'll need it.
So Julia, Opera Baltimore, and as well your colleagues at Maryland Opera are working, you know, collaborating with the symphony. Partially because there is this movement, this hope, this aspiration to bring opera back to Baltimore in a way that it hasn't been since the Baltimore Opera Company, which is founded by Rosa Poncel and had this great storied history for years and years. What's that effort entail? What do you hope to achieve when it comes to, you know, placing opera back in the forefront of the artistic fabric of the city?
I really appreciate that question, Tom. So I think the extent of our collaboration right now is conversation and making sure, you know, Jonathan and I have shared some really special time this year talking with fans, talking with, you know, my board is very interested in learning more about the efforts the Baltimore Symphony has. And I think that a rising tide lifts all boats. I truly believe that if we think that opera belongs here in Baltimore, which I certainly do. Opera Baltimore, which was originally born as Baltimore Concert Opera directly following the collapse of the Baltimore Opera, where I was a singer, we really just wanted to keep things going, and we have been for almost 17 years. But I think it's so, so important that we talk to one another and acknowledge that there is an ecosystem that deserves to exist. And each part of it has an important part to play. You know, we started with concert opera with piano, which is sort of a similar version to what you're doing with the symphony. But what you talked about coming with the hearing the singers, oh my gosh, that's the best part. Make it about the singing. Mm-hmm.
Julia Cook is the president and general director of Opera Baltimore. Jonathan Hayward, the music director of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, performances of Aida with the BSO and a wonderful cast this weekend are in Baltimore Friday night at the Meyerhof and Sunday afternoon in Bethesda at the Music Center at Strathmore. Break a leg. Have a lot of fun this weekend. Give my best to the cast. And Julia, thank you for your time as well.
Thanks.
And that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, Governor Wes Moore joins me. I'll speak with Baltimore City Comptroller Bill Henry as well, and Ray Kelly, the executive director of the Citizens Policing Project. Up next, Fresh Air. The comedian Atsuko Okasuka is the guest. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're tuned to 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.